1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On today's edition of the program, we predict the Bears' schedule in full, coming up in just a moment, plus a brand new interview today with Chris Bowden, the WGN sports reporter and 35-year veteran of the Chicago sports media landscape. We talk with him about some Blackhawks and Bears, his amazing career, and so much more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Before we start today, I have to tell you about State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. A lot of our listeners have gone to him for all their insurance needs, and he's been very helpful in getting them the coverage they deserve. There's no game with Brian. He's just here to help and make sure you feel safe. If you have insurance needs and you haven't called them yet, what are you waiting for? Dial up the number, 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or find them online at ryanismyagent.com. That's ryanismyagent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. Predictions aren't always right. Sure, many of you know that by now. You've watched my videos, many of you who know me for the past year, year and a half. I'm not always right. Try to be, but not always. And sometimes you call me out on it. And it's very hard for me to swallow my pride and say, you know what? I was wrong. So I want to preface this video and this show by telling you, save this video. Save the podcast. Listen on the radio. I'm giving you free rein right here. I'm making picks for every game for the Bears season. We'll see what happens. I can't wait to revisit this video in January and see how right I was, or how wrong I was, too. I encourage you all to like, save, and subscribe. And if I'm wrong, call me out. I expect hundreds of comments after the last game of the year in January telling me I was way off. Or way on. Who knows? But I do want to see how the Bears do this year. We all know there's so many issues with this team. Offensive line issues. Who's the quarterback going to be? Secondary. Defense aging. I mean, there's so many problems. And it's hard for me to see this team being a big-time player in the NFC. But I wrote down their schedule here. I have predictions for each game. We're going to go through all of them, weeks 1 to week 18. And I'll tell you how the Bears will do in 2021. We'll start in week 1. L.A. Rams. L.A. Rams are a Super Bowl contender. They have Matthew Stafford, great defensive front, Aaron Donald, and a good secondary, too. This is not going to be a pretty game on Sunday Night Football. Even if Justin Fields gets plays, or maybe he comes in halfway through, it really won't make too much of a difference. The Bears are not going to win this game. And the Rams are going to start off showing everybody in primetime why they are a legitimate Super Bowl contender. They will win this game, and the Bears will drop to 0-1. Week 2, they go to Cincinnati, face the Bengals. That'll be a win. Bengals are just as bad as the Bears, believe it or not, especially with the O-line department. Their O-line was the worst ever assembled, according to some experts last year. That led to Joe Burrow tearing his ACL in a sack. having to be out for the year. He's going to be back behind the same old line. The old line that couldn't protect him last year, but for some reason, I guess they might protect him this year. I don't know. Regardless, they will not win this game, the Bengals. They are too beat up. They are simply not good enough. Ja'Marr Chase, their number one pick here, is telling everybody that he can't see the football. Number one wide receiver, did great at LSU with Joe Burrow. Now he can't see the football, is dropping the ball. That team's a dumpster fire, and the Bears should easily win that game at home. They go to 1-1. Week 3, they go to Cleveland to face Baker Mayfield. Many of you don't know this, but I like Baker Mayfield. I think he has been treated unfairly. There were times last year in Cleveland where they said he's a bust, need a new quarterback, but he had 26 touchdowns, 8 picks. Led them to the playoffs. There was the defense, too. Run game, good coaching, yes. But Baker did hold on to the football. Less turnovers, more accurate passes, and threw for 26 touchdowns. He makes an impact in the game. The team is loaded. They are going to be, in my opinion, a serious contender this season, and the Bears have no chance to beat Cleveland at Cleveland. They drop to 1-2. Week 4, Lions, the week that I have circled, is the week in which Justin Fields makes his debut. Could be wrong, but I really have a feeling that's going to be the week. They're going to be at 1-2, the Bears. There's going to be so much pressure mounting and mounting from everybody saying, put in Fields. And against the Lions, in which the Bears should win, no matter who the quarterback is, I think that's the perfect opportunity to expose Justin Fields to the NFL, to a real NFL game, not a preseason game, with his first-string players, and dominate. I believe the Bears win that game to get to 2-2. Week 5, at Las Vegas. No chance. Sorry, not going to happen. Las Vegas is actually kind of in win-now mode. I mean, there's a sense of urgency there. This will be John Gruden's fourth year for the Raiders, and they haven't made the playoffs yet. That's a problem. Derek Carr's improved greatly since Gruden's come on. Josh Jacobs in the backfield. Decent defense. Darren Waller, good tight end. It's going to be a tough game for the Bears. No matter who's starting, by the way, even if it's Fields or Dalton, not going to work. Hard to contain that offense, especially when your secondary is what the Bears is. They're going to lose, go to 2-3. Packers week 6. I don't care if the Bears are at home. And I don't care how much pushback this gives me. The Bears are not going to beat the Packers this year. They're not. They're not going to beat Green Bay. And it's unfortunate. I'd love to see the Bears come in, take them out finally. But there's no chance. Even if Justin Fields starts, what's Justin Fields going to have to help him? Allen Robinson, maybe Darnell Mooney, and still a depleted O-line. Versus Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, a good run game and an okay defense. Not going to happen. The Packers are Super Bowl contenders. The Bears are a whole lot of nothing right now. The Bears will lose that game and drop to 2-4. And they turn around a week later. They face Tampa Bay at Tampa Bay. This is a tough schedule. We knew about this before, but when you sit down and really pick it apart, I'm really shocked the Bears were given this. Really, I am. I mean, this is nearly impossible for any team, even a good team. These are tough games. They will lose to the Bucs, lose to the GOAT Tom Brady. They'll go to 2-5. Week 8, San Francisco. This one is interesting. The Bears are at home. We don't know who their quarterback's going to be, nor do we know who the Bears' quarterback's going to be. If it's Jimmy Garoppolo, the Bears will win. Jimmy Garoppolo, as I've always said, is a high-tech Mitch Trubisky. He is overhyped. He really isn't that good. His numbers are comparable to Mitch. Now, if everybody here hates Mitch Trubisky, why does Jimmy Garoppolo get all the love? And everybody in San Francisco is clamoring for Trey Lance, and Kyle Shanahan said, wait, we'll put in Garoppolo for now. That could change, but we'll keep Garoppolo for the moment. If Trey Lance plays, it could be a different story. I wanted Lance more than Justin Fields here in Chicago. That said, this game being in Chicago, and if Jimmy Garoppolo starts on top of it, the Bears are going to win that game. They'll improve to 3-5. But that one's really a toss-up, but I'm going to give it to the Bears for their benefit. Week 9 at Pittsburgh. Again, unfortunately for the Bears, there's no chance. Pittsburgh's a great team. Chase Claypool is supposed to have a great year. Juju Smith-Schuster still there. Ben Roethlisberger's back. Really not going to be a good scenario for the Bears. Their defense is much improved, Pittsburgh. I don't see them winning that game. But week 10's a bye, and they head into the bye, in my opinion, with a 3-6 record. Now, if Justin Fields still hasn't come in yet, that could be the time the Bears put him in, too. Got to think about that. That could be a great opportunity. Hey, 3-6, not going to go anywhere. Season over. Put in Fields, see what he could do. Just keep that in mind, too. We go to week 11. Baltimore, at home, it's going to be a loss. You know, it's crazy to think that this Bears team will be 3-7. And if they had a different schedule, obviously, the record would be different. I might have some problems with this Bears team, but they are not a 3-7 team. But with this schedule, when you're facing off against the Packers, Bucks, 49ers, Steelers, Ravens, Raiders before that too, I don't know what to say. It's a pretty damn tough schedule. And they're not beating Lamar Jackson. The defense will not be able to contain him. Even though they lost J.K. Dobbins, Lamar's the number one running back and the number one quarterback on that team. That's a fact. I don't see them winning that game. They're going to go to 3-7. Face the Lions week 12. That's a win. The Bears will sweep that series. They'll move up to 4-7. Week 13 at home against the Cardinals. Very interesting game. You know, the Cardinals last year should have actually gotten to the playoffs, not the Bears. Now, they backed their way out by losing a couple of games. Kyler Murray's poised to have a breakout year, but is Cliff Kingsbury the right coach in Arizona? I don't think so. Great offensive mind, not a head coach. That said, I really do believe Kyler Murray is going to carry this team. He's going to wheel his way into the playoffs or into a wild card spot at least, and he will beat down the Bears in week 13. That puts him at 4-8. Week 14, Packers at Green Bay, 4-9. That's a loss. Week 15, Monday Night Football at home against Minnesota. I don't think they're winning it. Primetime football. Minnesota, I do believe, is going to be a good team. Now, Kirk Cousins is not playing that game. There's a chance. But even that, Dalvin Cook, good defense, solid all-around team. It's going to be very tough for the Bears to beat them. Especially in a game that matters. See, in the last game of the year, they faced the Vikings, and we'll talk about that one in a minute. I think the result might be different. But for now, they're not going to win that game. They will drop to 4-10. Week 16, Seattle, no go. In Seattle against Russell Wilson. Keep in mind, too, that's the day after Christmas. And we're talking about the playoff race thickening up, heating up. Don't think for a second Russell Wilson's going to say, you know what, it doesn't matter. One of the few quarterbacks in the NFL that could win with no help, Russell Wilson. He will win that game single-handedly if he has to. And if he gets help, great. If he doesn't, doesn't matter. He's going to win that game against the Bears. So at this point, the Bears are 4-11 with two games to go. They'll beat New York week 17, the Giants. They're at home, and the Giants are really not a big threat. Even if Saquon Barkley returns, Daniel Jones is the quarterback, and that's all you need to know there. And then week 18 against Minnesota. The Bears will win that game, only because I believe Minnesota will rest their starters. I think by that point, they'll have a playoff spot locked up. They won't have much to play for. They'll rest everybody. The Bears will win it. And the Bears will end their season at Gulp 6-11. Now, a couple of those games could go the other way. And that's why I said in the beginning, 7-10, 8-9. But based on taking a deeper look at the schedule, I think 6-11 is going to be the consensus. It's unfortunate. I don't want to sit here and say the Bears are going to lose double-digit games. They won't do anything, but the facts are this schedule is pretty damn hard. We don't know who their quarterback's going to be. They have no offensive line, defensive issues, no secondary. Have you ever heard of a Super Bowl team that has quarterback issues, no offensive line, no secondary, and an aging defense? I didn't think so. This Bears team will be lucky if they finish around 500 or a game over. Maybe in that scenario, they could make the playoffs. Maybe. But right now, I say 6-11. Yes, that might be a grim prognosis. But I dare you to look at this schedule and tell me they're going to beat a team like the Browns or Buccaneers. They're going to beat 2 or even 1 against Green Bay. It's not going to happen. Not doubting Justin Fields either. Even if Fields plays, we all know this already. We've talked about it. He has no help, no protection, no nothing around him. He's a rookie. He is not going to single-handedly win games against some of the NFL's best teams. Hey, if we're talking Lions, if we're talking a bottom feeder, Bengals, yes, I could see it. But Justin Fields is a rookie, and the NFL with no help is not going to single-handedly beat the Rams, the Packers, the Bucks, the Steelers, the Seahawks. Not going to happen. I don't care how talented he is. I know he's talented. I know he's a great quarterback. Not going to do that his rookie year. It's a tough prognosis, but here's the one good thing. Improvement is to come. If the Bears get a better schedule in 2022, if Justin Fields proves to be the real deal, they're going to be a contender. But until then, it might be a dark year, Bears fans, and I suggest you brace for some tough games. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Chris Bowden comes up next, so stay tuned. Sports Talk Chicago. Robert Johnson Lowell, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's an award-winning host, WGN sports reporter, and he's covered the Chicago sports scene for 35 years. Please welcome Chris Bowden to the program. Chris, it's great to have you on. How are you?
John, very good. Thanks for having me on. Sorry it's taken so long to do this, but glad we finally got the opportunity here.
So, Chris, what's your evaluation of the Blackhawks offseason, first off?
They're going to be much more interesting and fun to watch, I think, with the veterans that they've brought in. And I'm very surprised that they kind of pivoted in this direction. Now, everybody has their theory as to why they did that, whether, you know, it could have been trying to, you know, the conspiracy theorists saying, you know, with all the not so good stuff that's been going on off the ice that has emerged here in the offseason, you know, whether they wanted to try and get things focused back on the team on the ice, whether this was a case of, you know, Jonathan Toews coming back and saying, oh, okay, I'm ready to go. Even though I support the rebuild, let's see if we can get some reinforcements here. Or, you know, just the fact that, you know, probably in welcoming fans back and seeing that, you know, it was still even a year or two away. I mean, granted, last October they came out and said, this is going to be a full long-term rebuild. And I think it looked a little bit better than a lot of people expected last season. Now for them to go out and make these big splashes with the Joneses and the Flurries and the Johnsons and the McCabes, among others, it's going to be a very interesting year. And I would expect them to, at the very least, contend for a playoff spot in that Central Division. But again, that's a brutal division, so they've certainly put themselves in the mix personnel-wise, whether they can execute that on the ice against the likes of, you know, Colorado and Dallas and St. Louis and figure out a way to beat Nashville, just to name a few, is going to be an interesting challenge, but I think they put themselves in better position to do that.
How significant was the Fleury move for the goalie spot?
I was kind of surprised they did that, but when you think back on it, you know, we saw Kevin Lankinen show so much promise during the meat of that shortened schedule last year. But then as they relied upon him a little bit more, him experiencing the grind of the NHL, this level, the intensity and the compactness of the schedule, you saw him wear down a little bit there. Now, he's probably disappointed, you know, if you talk to him off the record, that he's not going to be the guy this year, but there is only one more year on Marc-Andre Fleury's contract. Who knows, you know, whether he'll be around more than a year. We'll have to see how that relationship goes between the Blackhawks and Fleury, who, you know, kind of dipped his toes in the water in terms of whether he wanted to actually come to Chicago after really entrenching himself in that Las Vegas community. But there's actually no better guy for Kevin Lankinen to grow under than Marc-Andre Fleury. And you have to expect this is going to be, you know, maybe a 50-30 split, something like that. Perhaps a little bit more if the Blackhawks find themselves in contention down the stretch where, you know, they can rely on the guy who has been there and Marc-Andre Fleury. But whether this just a one-off year with Fleury and then Lankinen can take over, or whether, you know, they keep taking this year by year with a veteran who has accomplished absolutely everything in the most important position, you know, in the sport, you know, and having himself almost a career year last year is going to be interesting to see. But having that guy back there as the last line of defense on top of bolstering their defensive core, I think is a huge move, because that was the main weakness, not the goaltending, but the defense in general. A weakness that has really gone back to Joel Quenneville's last season or two here.
What do you expect out of Fleury at his age? Could we see replication potentially last season?
I think there's the potential there. It depends on how well this Blackhawks blue line gels in front of him. But he has shown he can win games by himself with his athleticism and you know, acrobatic nature that he has. I would expect him to have a very good season based on he's not going to have to carry the entire load. If you can look at, Connor Murphy perhaps being paired with a Seth Jones, McCabe, whether he is with, a Murphy or someone else, or a Riley Stillman or a Calvin DeHaan, you know, and working various other guys into that mix and on that third pairing, I think it's a much more solid defensive core that'll be playing in front of no matter who is in goal. You would think Kevin Lankinen was going to be a better goaltender this year if he was going to head into it as the number one. So I think that combination should raise the Blackhawks to whatever they were last season, 28th, 29th in goals against average and shots against. You would expect them to rise to at least the better half of those kind of statistics, and that's really been this team's bugaboo over the last few years.
You mentioned Seth Jones. Are you intrigued for him despite kind of a down year last year?
Yeah, I've always been a Seth Jones fan, and look at that Columbus team he was on last year. He lost his partner over the course of the last couple of years, who complimented him so well, in Zach Werenski, who missed, I don't know, at least half the season, if not more, for a Columbus team that, really did not live up to expectation. They made the controversial trade with Winnipeg, with Dubois for Laine, who didn't seem to really be on the same page as John Tortorella last season. And that Columbus team was pretty much a mess last season. And no doubt Seth Jones was a part of that, but you also have to look at the bigger picture with him not being there with his longtime partner, Zach Werenski. I think that affected some of his numbers. And, I think whether he's paired with a Connor Murphy or a Calvin DeHaan this season, which will allow him to free up and play more comfortably in his game, I think it'll also raise his defensive level if he's paired with one of those guys, or even a Jake McCabe as well. So I think the Seth Jones is a good one. Whether move is a good one, whether that's the right price for him, I'm not so sure, because I think they Stan kind of overblew the market on that, and now he has himself a $9.5 million salary cap commitment over the course of the next 8 years or so. That was kind of a hard swallow for me, but getting a guy who is still only 26 years old and has shown he can have a Norris Trophy type season in him in the previous campaigns leading up to this last one, in which his play fell. I think it's a good move for the Blackhawks, despite the salary cap hit that they're going to have to absorb.
So how far could the Hawks go this year? What's their ceiling based on all these moves?
Well, first you got to get in. And, if they go in with a fairly solid defensive core and Marc-Andre Fleury ready to go, you roll the dice and take your chances. You know, can they win the Stanley Cup with this group right now? Highly doubtful, but they've certainly raised their potential for making the playoffs. And, so much of it when you get in is, how healthy you are. Those are always the great unknowns when you take a look at teams that A, get in? How many of your key players are you missing or are hurting or not at 100%? And then as you go through the grind of that two and a half months, which will hopefully, knock on wood, be a normal NHL season coming up, there are so many X factors included. I mean, look at some of these teams. You know, Las Vegas was not 100%. They were one of the odds-on favorites going into the playoffs. Colorado suffered its share of injuries. No one would have thought that they wouldn't be able to get through to the Stanley Cup final as well. So you have all these X factors that are involved, and it's going to be interesting to see whether the Blackhawks can get themselves into one of those top four. And if they do, whatever their health level is, they've certainly improved their chances with what is so crucial in the playoffs, and that is defense and goaltending. And if they have those things in place, if they're good enough to make the playoffs and they're in place and healthy enough going into the postseason, they could set themselves up, I imagine, for a pretty deep run.
Chris Bonin here on Sports Talk Chicago. Chris, let's talk Bears now. What do you make of Andy Dalton starting week one?
I think it's still the right move to make. I know everyone's kicking and screaming for Justin Fields, and I certainly can't blame them for doing that. I mean, he's the shiny new toy, and credit Ryan Pace for making the move to go up and make that trade and get him, because a lot of people smarter than I in observing college football saying he was just as good, if not better, in terms of ceiling as Trevor Lawrence and a couple of these other guys who were chosen before him. But nevertheless, he's a young quarterback, and even though I think he has shown a grasp of the game and has much more collegiate experience at a high level than Mitch Trubisky had when he was drafted a few years ago. And let's remember, a lot of fans were clamoring for Mitch to start right away over Mike Glennon. Nevertheless, Andy Dalton has a much better resume than Mike Glennon did. And, you know, the fact that he has been there, done that, taken teams to the playoffs, although not recently, I think it's still the right move to start the season. My concern is that, you know, the performance that he and that first unit had during the course of the exhibition season wasn't exactly shining in the two outings that they had. Granted, you have to give him the caveat that he didn't have the offensive line in front of him that he is expected to have here against the LA Rams in the opener on Sunday night. But you have to give him that opportunity. Still, even with a healthy offensive line, that's going to be a challenge against that Rams team on Sunday night. But there are, if you look at the schedule, there are little points in the schedule where you can see if Andy Dalton or the offense isn't performing as it should, whether it's, you know, more to Dalton's side in terms of who you're going to lay blame with, or the offense overall, whether it's the offensive line performance or anything else, there are parts in the schedule when you look at it, whether it's after the first 4 weeks, if this team is not 2-2, is that when you pull the trigger on Justin Fields? After, say, a week seven, I believe they play Tampa Bay in week seven or week eight, you know, if they're not, you know, still in that playoff mix, I think those are some definite openings in the schedule where you can slot Justin Fields in. But I'm also a believer, too, that Matt Nagy is going to find a way to have Justin Fields ready to go in certain situations here right off the bat to give him situational playing time when the season opens, perhaps, you know, as soon as Sunday night against the LA Rams.
So you think this could be kind of like a Taysom Hill and Drew Brees situation from last year, even Lamar Jackson in his rookie year in Baltimore?
Sure, yeah, and I don't know if it'll be that heavily split. I mean, Hill certainly has taken his share of snaps from Brees over the course of the last couple of years. Whether it's that heavy, I'm not so certain. But, you know, Hill was capable of doing that when you're looking at a future Hall of Fame quarterback. With Drew Brees, you know, behind center for the New Orleans Saints. Now, you know, whether it's whether Justin Fields is utilized to that extent, I'm not sure. But I would imagine there are certain situations. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Justin Fields trot out on the field in certain situations on Sunday evening against the Rams.
What excites you about his game when you watch him play?
Justin Fields, well, I haven't, you know, been able to get up there and see him in person, but for the people who I've listened to, who observe him much more. The game doesn't seem too big for him. It certainly wasn't the case with during his performances in the preseason at all. He seems to have a calmness about him. You know, he said after that first preseason game against Miami, which really lit the fire under Bears fans to get him more involved or perhaps start right away, that, you know, he wasn't that nervous. The game didn't seem too big for him, and he's certainly shown that capability. So the fact that he can provide that extra element with his legs, now he's going to have to be smart about it here. He's going to have to learn his way against the best players and the biggest and the meanest players in the world in the NFL, when to and when not to. We saw him, you know, suffer that injury in the college football playoff against the Clemson Tigers in that particular game. He's going to have to be smart about it. And you know what? These are the best minds in the world he's going to be going up against in terms of recognition of defenses and things like that. There's no one's going to be nice to him on the other side of the ball when it comes to scheming against him. So, you know, throwing a rookie out here and seeing different looks and being able to adjust to those looks is certainly a spoon-fed process for just about any rookie quarterback out there. We saw years ago how much Peyton Manning stunk and was beaten up in his first year in the league, but we all know he got past that. Now, he was thrown out in the fire right away. That's not going to be the case with Justin Fields, but when he eventually gets his opportunity, you know, he's going to see all these different looks that he has never seen before with the best players, the best defenders, and the best defensive coordinators in the world, you know, trying to confuse the kid.
Is he the savior for the Bears, Chris? Is that accurate?
Oh, I don't know if I'd want to put that on him. You know, I'm always a believer that it takes a village, you know, except for, you know, even as great as Michael Jordan was, he needed help around him before they started winning championships. And but I think he provides more excitement for the future at that position than we have ever seen before with what he was able to accomplish in college, as opposed to, you know, a Mitch Trubisky or a Rex Grossman or a Cade McNown, going back to those days. So what he was able to accomplish in college, with a lot of good parts around him at Ohio State, but what he was able to accomplish in college and transferring that over and at least seeing what he has shown so far certainly provides a lot of excitement that, you know, perhaps finally we can sing hallelujah a year or two down the road when we see what this kid can do and we see how he can grow. And hopefully he is that for the Bears, but, you know, they're going to have to be smart about surrounding him with the right pieces too in order to be that savior.
So what's your expectation for the Bears this year?
I'm still not thinking anything better than, you know, a slightly over 500 or perhaps slightly under, depending on the injury situation. You know, here we are in the first week already worried about, you know, Eddie Goldman having to deal with something as we record here on Thursday afternoon, not knowing, you know, what his status is going to be for the opener. You know, there are certainly some Achilles heels. I like that defense overall, but when you look at the secondary, it's except for Eddie Jackson, you know, it's awfully green, especially at that cornerback position. And, you know, when you see some of the weapons that these other teams in the NFC North have to throw at the Bears, that some of these young kids are going to have to defend. Now, there's a pretty high excitable ceiling for Jalen Johnson, but still that inexperience and how thin they are at that crucial position certainly worries me. And then when you get down into the trenches on the offensive side of the ball, if Andy Dalton's going to be successful, he's going to have a halfway decent offensive line in front of him. Same's going to have to be for Justin Fields whenever he is called upon. So how those guys on the quarter, Ifedi and Jason Peters can hold up. I think the middle of the Bears offensive line is vastly underrated. If they can stay healthy, that is certainly their strength. The question obviously comes from the corners on whether Jason Peters at age 39 can hold up and hold up in a quality manner over the course of a 16-game season. That certainly remains in question. And then Jermaine Ifedi as well, who also missed almost all of training camp, whether he can hold down that right tackle position. You know, I was never a huge fan of Leno and Massey, but right now I'd probably take both of them right now over the tandem going into this season from what we've seen so far. over Peters and Effetti right now.
You know, there was so much fanfare when they got rid of Charles Leno. It's pretty funny how things change, huh?
Yeah, and you know what? I always thought of Charles Leno as serviceable.
Sure.
I always thought that there was room for an upgrade. And, you know, a couple of times over his time here, over Charles Leno Jr.'s time here, the Bears did check into some high-priced guys that they lost out on who would have supplanted Charles Leno at the job. But nevertheless, it was a guy who answered the bell. He may not have been elite at what he did. And again, I think there was always a clamoring for putting a better guy out there at such a crucial position. But nevertheless, he managed to find a way to hold down the fort. And, now you're looking for a guy. You're hoping that Jason Peters can be that guy who can hold down the fort. So hindsight's 2020. They had some salary cap decisions to make on who to get rid of. It turned out to be Leno. It turned out to be Kyle Fuller in order to, make some room for other people and reward some other people. So we'll see how this plays out, but it is a bit of the roll of the dice at that particular position.
More to come with Chris Bowden in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Here on Sports Talk Chicago. Chris, I wanted to also talk about your career for a moment, too. What prompted your start in sports media?
Oh, you know, I was always a sports fan growing up here in the Chicago area. You know, I could never get enough of turning on the TV or turning on the radio when I was growing up, listening to, every team possible. I'll confess I was raised in a Cubs household on the South Side. But by the time I was 10 or 12 years old, they broke my heart enough where, when I had a mind to, realize, if I can't make it playing sports, I was going to try to find a way to remain involved in sports in one way or another. And, I was always, a big fan of watching all the local television sportscasts when I was growing up, watching all the games when I was growing up. First time I was taken to a Cubs game by my dad, it was back in, I think it was 1972. We went to the ballpark and I was waiting to hear, where's Jack Brickhouse? How come we can't hear Jack Brickhouse while we're sitting out here in the stands? So he had to explain to me that that was just for all the people at home. I thought Jack did play-by-play for everybody at the ballpark as well. Nevertheless, it was always a way. And as I got going in high school too, I was able to play sports there, but it wasn't going to be a long-term thing. I wasn't being flooded with scholarship offers for college or anything like that. So the reality sunk in and my interest level got raised as we went along that if I wasn't going to play the sports, I was going to find a way to be around them and report on them. And that's kind of how all this evolved.
Tell me about your journey through the business too. You made many stops along the way to where you are today. How have you made it there?
Oh, I don't know, but a lot of it is luck and being fortunate. At the same time, and for anybody out there, who's thinking of getting into the field as well. And, good Lord, it's much different now than it was, back in the back in the 80s when I wanted to get involved in it. But the bare minimum you can do is know your stuff. Back in the day, it was read the newspaper. And unfortunately, newspapers these days aren't quite as filled with information, especially locally, as you would like. And that's something that's very sad to me, because I would read the sports sections from front to end, and now the sports sections only last four pages at most in our major dailies here. But there are alternatives now with different websites, and I would just try to stay on top of everything as much as you can. Know your stuff, know the bare minimum. So if called upon to do a sportscast or write a story about something, you have that background in terms of you're on top of everything with what's going on. And that's, quite frankly, something I'm kind of readapting now over at WGN-TV, because for the past four years, I have been so NHL and Blackhawks and hockey centric that that's where I spent most of my time, you know, reading and studying. Yeah, I'd pay attention to and keep reading about the other four teams in town here and stay on top of them, as well as all the local college teams. But if I had to make a choice, I wasn't going to get around to every single thing that I would when I was on the Blackhawks and hockey beat. So if I had to make choices, most of my attention viewing wise and reading wise was on hockey. And now, as I'm back reporting on quote unquote everything, I've missed some things over the course of the past 4 or 5 years. So I'm trying to rebuild my base of knowledge with some of the things I perhaps may have missed over the course of the past 4 or 5 years. And, you find your way to do that, but, when you get into it, that's probably the best thing you can do. Stay on top of the teams in your community, in this case, Chicago, stay on top of, you know, what's going on around all the respective leagues. If you know your stuff, if you have a passion for it, if you do, you also have to know how to write, whether it's broadcast, whether it's online, whether it's, you know, the fading business of print media right now. You also have to know how to write wherever you go and speak wherever you go. And so I think those are the baselines that you have to know in order to get into this business. And also know there's going to be bumps along the road, because goodness knows I've been very fortunate, but I've also, you know, gone through some times where I'm not a particular flavor of new management that comes in, or they want their own people. And, you know, sometimes you're kicked to the curb, and you got to know that in those instances, you got to try to find a way to pick yourself back up, dust yourself off, and keep plugging away to find out what's next in the journey.
Which one of your stops during your journey did you enjoy the most?
Well, that's tough to say, because each one had their respective had a respective uniqueness to it. If I had to say anything, it was probably the 10 years that I had over at Comcast Sportsnet. Although, you know, I'm going to say as well, it was fun being around the Blackhawks for 4 years, mostly because I was also a team employee and I had, you know, some access being a team employee that regular media wouldn't have. And I'm really excited about, you know, what may lay ahead here at WGN-TV. To me, it's amazing that they have remained committed to sports within their newscasts as much as they have after losing all their games, you know, losing the Cubs, losing the White Sox, losing the Bulls and Blackhawks over the course of the past few years. Yeah, they still have the Chicago Fire, but they have committed to covering sports within their news. So you have sports on their morning shows, and at 4 and at 5 and at 6 and at 9, and now on GN Sports at 10:30, a half hour devoted to Chicago sports, which I think has been missing ever since Comcast Sportsnet decided to bail on its, nightly show that it had. I still think there's a desire for local viewers to have that nightly commitment to all things going on Chicago sports. But going back to Comcast Sports, and it was 10 years of being the place to be, the place to go for sports viewers, because we had the games, we had newscasts, which were all sports, and you could go out and report on teams in the field. Every home game was covered. You could go out and do some features as well, spend some time on a particular story. So, you know, everything in doing that, from anchoring to reporting to, you know, hosting Blackhawks pre and post for several years, reporting on them for several years, and then shifting over to the Bears beat from 2013 through 2017, is as bad as they were during that stretch. You know, it provided a lot of fun, a lot of opportunities, and you were around the teams that every, you know, the five main teams, and then some that everyone wanted to learn about, to see what was going on about, to listen over, and, you know, to be in the fire with, you know, 8 or 9 other on-air people and countless other very talented people behind the scenes, was a whole lot of fun during those 10 years. And that's taking nothing away from, you know, the other stops at BBM Radio and BBM TV as well. They all had their, great amount of fun that they provided me.
What's the most memorable event you've covered during your career?
Boy, that's a tough one, because I've been really lucky to my first road trip as a reporter was Super Bowl 20.
Wow.
In New Orleans. I got to spend the week down there. That was my first roadie when I was all of 22 years old. That was obviously memorable, but to be able to cover, be there for two of the three Blackhawks Stanley Cups. I wasn't in the building for the third one, ironically, at home, but being able to cover them along the way and be fortunate enough to cover them along the way, and to be able to cover Michael Jordan through the entire run. I wasn't there for the actual championship games for the first three-peat, but I was there for the second three-peat. And what a wild rock star ride that was when you throw Rodman into the mix. It was absolute chaos. But, being around the greatest player who ever lived and covering him throughout the course of his career was a whole lot of fun when you see greatness up close, and also a guy who got it, who understood what he needed to do with the media on a day-to-day basis, was really fun to be around. But I'm gonna say this, and it probably will surprise a whole lot of people. The thing I had most fun doing was when I was at Channel 2, we would do, just to be different from some of the other stations in town, offer something different. Every Friday night during high school football season, we would go out, take a photographer and I, John Krupski and I would go every week, leave from the station, go to Migs Field. We would go into a helicopter and take that chopper to one high school football game, landed in, a vacant field next to the football field, go there, shoot the first half of a game. We would then get in the helicopter, and then that chopper would go to a second game relatively close by. And at that second game, Chuck Davidson, the longtime great sports photographer for Channel 2, would have a truck there, and he'd be shooting the second game. And we would get together, and we would, get highlights from the first game we were at. Chuck would know highlights from the second game that we were at. And we would go in the truck, and we would chop away, and we would produce a two-minute package featuring both of those games, including interviews with fans, interviews, with the coach, interviews. If we got to that second game and the game ended, say, right before 10 o'clock, we would get a player or a coach coming off the field, and we would edit together about a two-minute package and do a live shot wrapping around that, pre-edited package. And it was such a rush because you knew there was a deadline. You knew you were working with two other great people, and picking out highlights, chopping them together, doing tracks in that package, and then wrapping around with a live shot when Tim Weigel or a Howard Sudbury would toss to you, having to get it all done by 10:20, 10:23 on a Friday night was really a rush. And also working with high school people who are there excited to see you, happy to have you there. That's not so much the case when you're covering professional sports, but having people who are happy to have you there and will go the extra mile to do anything you needed. It was a thrill. I mean, it was really a rush. And we did that for a couple of years in the early 2000s. And it was a whole bunch of fun. There were times because of weather, we weren't able to do it. We would have to drive from location A to location B. There were times when, we're in the chopper and all of a sudden weather would come in and there would be a low ceiling, and all of a sudden the chopper wouldn't be able to go from game one to game two. So you just kind of had to adjust on the fly and roll the dice. But to me, those are the kind of things that made it a real rush. And it was a whole lot of fun. And despite all I've been able, to cover Stanley Cups and NBA championships and, with Super Bowl 20 and even being around the White Sox during their 2005 World Series run, that would be the most, I really looked forward to those Friday nights in the fall when we could do that. It was a blast.
Chris, before we finish up today, last question. What's the funniest moment that you've been a part of in your career?
Well, you gave me a heads up on this one. And I had to really think long and hard because I don't know if there was a singular singular moment, but I would have to say, and I just came up with this this morning, Thursday morning, ahead of our taping. I guess the funniest moment I've been involved in is that when we were taping promos back in the early 2010s or so for our Blackhawks coverage over at Comcast Sportsnet, we had to go out and tape promos for the Blackhawks, and they decided they were going to do this with all of us who were involved in Blackhawks coverage on the ice, on skates, and we would have to skate up to a microphone. And, you know, their goal back then was one goal, and we would kind of work that into our promos that we did. Well, I hadn't skated since I was a little kid. And so they put me on skates, and I was like Bambi trying to walk for the first time. And cameras are rolling, and we had to do several takes. Luckily, I have a bum knee that I still haven't replaced, and it wasn't as bad then as it was now, but that didn't help matters. So I'm just basically trying to skate my way from an end board to a microphone in the center of the ice and deliver my line. And it was like a baby taking his first steps or Bambi with the wobbly legs and all. And I had to hang on for dear life to grab onto that microphone stand and deliver it. But they would show us coming from off camera to on camera trying to skate. And it was pretty funny. But it was the true thing. So somewhere out there, there's probably some video of our old Blackhawks promos, myself. Of course, you know, Sarah Kustak, the athlete in us all who was covering the Blackhawks with me at the time. You know, she was able to zip right up there. A couple of others were, you know, in between the two of us as we did those promos. But that was probably the funniest and most humbling on-air moment for me is when we had to do those promos for the Blackhawks back then.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to have you on. Best wishes, of course, at WGN, and looking forward to the next time we chat. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Looking forward to doing it again. Appreciate you giving me the time here. And good luck to you with the podcast and the show and everything. And hopefully we can do this again somewhere down the road.
Great talk there with Chris Bowden. That'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Chris Bowden himself, Matt Dubio, WCKG, Jim DeTobin, Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No! Where are the turtles?